was going to call in. We have it set up for him, so if he calls in, we'll welcome him during this discussion, but I won't hold up anybody. It's got a lot of information in a short period of time to cover it. I just want to talk a little bit. This is the first draft of this year's budget. A little talk about the process a little bit. So management, accounting, project managers, we all get together to review the program, projects, and operational needs for the fiscal year. Budget needs are based off of actual figures, estimates, invoices, or quotes, prior agreements, approved cost shares, or contractual amounts that the district has entered into through the previous fiscal year. Then we look at the revenue side. Cash on hand, property tax valuations are all estimated for the upcoming fiscal year. So we kind of go off a static mill levy, the same as last year, and a 3.5% valuation increase. That's what we used for the beginning revenue. We won't get final valuations until late August. And we try to see if we can get any preliminary valuations. And that's sometimes difficult depending on the county. So we really are conservative when we estimate the valuation increase. It was 3.8% last year, 3.89. So we're guessing it's going to be a little bit similar than it was last year. So after we take that, the district budget needs were $7.4 million to $9.4 million over estimated revenue. So 7.4 to 9.4 was cut immediately to match up what the program and operation expenses would be for the fiscal year. And we consider such thing as timing of the project, priority of the projects. Can the project be delayed? Can it be carried over a couple fiscal years instead of one? What are our legal obligations? We have an interlocal agreement. Are there other cost shares out there that we've contributed to or need to contribute to? Obviously, public safety, environmental projects and programs take a precedent over most everything else. And then any future financial operational impacts. One thing we don't want to skimp on, for example, is maintenance and things like that. So this draft of the budget will change. No question about it. There's already changes being discussed as plans gel, as other information becomes available, estimates may become firmer. And so this will change from the next draft in August. Overall, it probably won't change dramatically, but there will be changes in where money is spent, money is transferred, things like that. So it will change. There's no question about it. One thing that we did, the district, we want to make sure that it meets all legal, financial, and contractual obligations and all statutory obligations. So preliminary, this does meet the LID statutory authority or LID requirements that are by the state. So we want to make sure that we're meeting all of those obligations as well. The conservation assistance program, maintenance, equipment, and technology, these were three areas where no reductions occurred. And I've said this before a million times, if you skimp on maintenance, equipment, and technology, you pay three or four times later to make up for that. So that's one of the things that we want to continue to focus on is maintenance. And we have a lot of levees, we have a lot of dams and things like that that need constant care. And so we definitely don't want to skimp in those particular categories. Debt payments continue to decrease. Actually, this is the first time in about 5 years that all of our rural water systems are in solid financial condition due to the steps that this board took and the work of Mr. Nelson. This will be, if this in fact continues, this will be the 12th out of 13th year static or lower mill levy is proposed, and overall spending continues to decrease. A couple of items that we want to touch on is, I got a call from a World Herald reporter like an hour before the budget meetings talking about budgets and what our plans were and told them the process that we go through. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, as far as trying to keep up with cost. And so I sent out just a quick email to some of our project managers. And if you look at a lot of the things that we do, for example, purchasing property, that has went up 20 to 30% over the last few years. And just, for example, buying rock, that's gone up 6% a year for the last 6 years. So that continues, those costs continue to increase. And so when you're dealing with a 3.5% or 4% or 2.5% increases in your revenue, it's difficult to keep up. And so that's part of the struggle, is how do we continue to keep property taxes in check, but then also continue to meet those obligations that we have. So I'll go more specifically into the budget. The And you have it in your packet if you want to go through it. The first page is basically the memo that we will discuss during the budget session at the subcommittee at the 6:30 session. This year's budget is the total operating budget is $69.8 million. Total property tax requirement is $23,627,168. And so if you had a home valued at $100,000, you'd pay $3,803 a year or $316 a month. $150,000 home would be $57.09 a year or $475 a month. And if you had a $200,000 house, it'd be $633 a month. So it just obviously goes up. Again, we're working on final valuations. Those won't be available till mid-August. We do have some assumptions we made. We have a $700,000 budget necessary for cash reserve, and that's less than a month of operations for the district. And it's estimated that the cash on hand is $8.2 million. The additional asking for this year's property taxes compared to last is about $800,000 difference. Also to note, too, this budget that we share, that we work from, is 45 pages. The budget that we send to the state is 5 pages. So you can tell this is a very exhaustive, detailed look at what we spend. That's obviously of no value outside of this organization as far as the state's concerned. They just like to see totals and in general spending patterns. So their biggest issue is you don't spend more than you told them that you're going to spend. This is very synthesized for the state's working sheets. The first page is draft budget. If you want to go through that, that just breaks out the district's accounts, revenue, and property tax requirement. It also compares the fiscal year 17 budget with the proposed budget in 18. And it breaks it out per program, per example, information education, flood control, erosion control, all those projects and programs that the district has. On the back of that sheet, it would be it's the breakout of the valuation for the county. It continues to be the case that 90% of the valuation and property taxes come from Douglas and Sark County. The other four counties make up the additional 10% in varying degrees. And there is a breakout of the valuation distribution on that sheet. Again, since we're basing everything off 3.5% this year, we don't have a valuation increase for each individual county. If you go to page 3 of the 45 of the budget, this is the general administration, how the cash on hand is calculated. And then we go down through, for example, vehicle equipment, repairs, maintenance, gas and oil, director's expenses, insurance for employees, retirement contributions, work comp, liability insurance, bond payments, Social Security, Medicare, all of those types of things that deal with the operation and administration of the district. Accounting fees, attorney fees, legislative representation, O&M supplies, special projects, those are all detailed there. As well as the comparison of the 17 budget compared to the budget and the actual, and then the budget requested for fiscal year 2018. Again, like throughout the budget, these are based off actually either quotes, insurance quotes, they're based off estimates of past spending years, or they're based on just good general educated guesses. And so we try to refine these numbers as more information becomes available, and the final budget is adopted in September. If you look on page 5, this breaks down, it's Fund 01. This breaks down specific categories of the first, or page 3 and 4. And basically, they're notes to tell you what that specific category may entail. So dues and memberships, it gives you a list of NERD dues. Health, life, disability, dental, it gives you a breakdown of their. Our premium increases for the past years have been fairly good. We had a decrease of 2.5% in 15, and this year we're looking at a 5% increase for medical. So again, those are the things that you have to try to keep up with as we continue to move forward. We've been very fortunate, though. We haven't seen the double-digit increases that we've seen throughout the country and other healthcare plans and things like that. Then you have our special planning engineering projects, office equipment, maintenance, machinery equipment. Those were all approved by the board previously to purchase those vehicles and those equipments. And so those are reflected as exactly as you approved those previously. Page 6 of 45 is the I&E budget. A couple items to note here. This is a very small part of our annual budget. And we did hire a new public relations information person, and Jennifer, she's not here this evening. She's already had some very good ideas. The public information campaigns, the PSAs will no longer be pursued. She wants to go more toward the social media aspect and do some other ideas. So that category 828 will be public education campaign and not public information. It will be more types of educational piece for the community of how they can improve water quality, how they can assist with flood control, public safety, all those types of things. So that's going to change significantly. She also has some ideas on Spectrum. That may change drastically as well. It goes out 3 times a year, and that's dates really kind of loose. We may only do that 1 time a year, do the rest electronically. So that'll cut a lot of printing costs like that out. So we're always looking for ways to streamline the budget and make cost savings where you can. Then we have the educational assistance program and all those types of things on page 8 that is part of our outreach, obviously, with the schools and the community as far as the education programs are concerned. More nature, and a lot of these are just very similar to what the allocation was last year. One thing I can say, this budget is a modification of last year's, and last year's was a modification of the year before. And one reason is that's because we do things consistently over, it seems like, a long period of time. It takes a number of years to complete a project. So you'll see them come back consistently. So that's why we continue to have a pretty stable budget. Page 9, Thompson Creek Levee Rehab, that is winding up. And so you'll see that that expenditure has dropped significantly, about $33,000 from over $400 the previous year. There's just some cleanup work there to do some surfacing and some erosion control and matting there. Floodway purchase program, and then you can see actually, if you look at the notes below, of what that will be spent on. You have the Arlington flood mitigation assistance, and then we have Coal Creek with City of Omaha, and then the land rights and those expenses that will be expended to complete those. Page 10 is the urban stormwater program. And again, this was this is our contribution to the administration of the or their contribution to our administration of that program. The flood preparedness, that's also listed there, program 536. And then again, we listed what that is. 3120 is the contributions reimbursement for the flood warning system. It breaks out each individual partner's contribution for that. And then also we've got some professional services that will be expended. And again, that footnote tells you exactly where those funds will be going for those contracts, USGS and annual maintenance and all of those types of things. Public website. Page 11 to 45, Omaha Levee Certification. That is a contribution that was approved by the board. We contribute up to $2 million total, and it's a yearly maximum of $500,000. To the City of Omaha for their levy certification study. Western Sarpy Clear Creek, again, we're getting wrapping up that project. And for example, this was a 15-year project. And it's finally getting toward its completion. We'll be closed out soon, hopefully. And hopefully we won't see this, but maybe a very, very small number in future years. I'm looking at Martin. But so then this is what was a cost share with the Corps of Engineers and with our partners, Lower Platte South and Lower Platte North, in Sarpy County. And so the state of Nebraska also participated, Resource Development Fund. And it was a very lengthy project, but finally completed and actually has shown some benefits with Ice Jam. We had a couple of years, or near Ice Jam a couple of years ago. So we have floodplain remapping, and this is for the new floodplain maps that will be generated for the Papillion Creek watershed. And again, we talked about the reduction in that in the annual savings to property taxpayers or to insurance holders that have flood insurance. And we're anywhere from $7 to $10 million a year that this will save those constituents. And about 3,000 structures will be either taken out or prevented from going into the floodplain because of that expenditure. Flood mitigation program, again, that's some carryover for Blair flood mapping, and hopefully we'll complete that. Also on some of these that you see carryover, we're doing a better job of making sure or ensuring that the project will be completed. So we're following up with entities that we caution with, say, are you going to complete that this year? If they're not, then say, well, then you need to at least start it so we know that we're going to have this expenditure. If they have a response like they don't know when they're going to start it or it's several years in the future, we're saying then you need to reapply. And that way we're not carrying over these projects consistently for multiple years and carrying over those budget numbers. Okay, then we have the, on page 12, again, we have the Missouri River levee certification, and that's a continuing ongoing project to get the levee certified in the Offutt Air Force Base area and in South Sarpy. South Sarpy Watershed Partnership, there's the expenditures there. Also, maintenance and dams, so now we get into our maintenance programs, and again, professional services listed, and some of the contract work that will be carried out under those particular programs. Page 14 of 45, maintenance channels and levees. Again, a lot of maintenance work. We have aging infrastructure as well as the rest of the country, and so we continue to continue to have to make repairs, continue to have to rehab, continue to maintain those structures. So we continue to have to prioritize and take care of those things. Page 15 breaks down the Elk Creek Drainage Project. Again, that's a small amount. Pigeon Creek Special Watershed Conservation Assistance Program. We kicked it up to $800,000, and that was generated from the fact that we added more money to that program this year, and it was utilized. Staff thinks that we will continue to meet that benchmark, and so we kicked it up, and we'll continue to fund it at that level, or at least propose to fund it at that level. We have the road structure program has not been very popular, and we're working on ways to maybe try to entice folks to take advantage of that, but so that's zeroed out. 16 of 45 Urban Conservation Assistance Program. These are the applications that are discussed in April, May, and that Eric goes through and the board either approves or modifies or denies applications. These will reflect what has been approved in those discussions and approved by the board. The Urban Drainage Way Program, Cramper Lake, Danish Alps Rec Area, you can see that actually brings in money, and that is because that we're finally getting reimbursements from, for example, the Resource Development Fund and other partners that are paying up their share. So we basically built a project, and then now we're collecting those funds. So that will continue to decline as the State Resource Development Fund pays up and they get caught up on their obligations to the district. A big item that we're doing there is a fish cleaning station, and we think working with Game and Parks, that will have a huge impact on that particular structure, and it will even increase visitors more to have that fish cleaning station there. I guess they're very popular, and they tend to draw a lot of fishermen to an area. We're going to water quality, chemigation program, groundwater management plan. We're continuing to become more involved in IMPs and things of that nature. The Alliance, that budget, the Lower Platte North voted to not continue into the Alliance agreement per the three NRD's stated goal or stated desire was if we all three were involved or it ended. And so as a result of that vote, the Alliance no longer exists. However, we do have some ongoing contracts that we are responsible for water quality monitoring and things like that, that we'll need to continue to honor. And then once those expire, new arrangements will have to be made. It will no longer be with the Alliance. It may be with an individual district to continue those things. So, so you will see that that continue to decrease or stay the same for the next few years until those contracts are satisfied. Water quality programs is on page 19 of 45. Well abandonment program, NRA. Those are all contributions that have been approved previously by the board. Lake dredging program is on page 20 of 45. And we have the vegetation management. Well, that's a partnership with the three NRDs in the Lower Platte. And obviously, we continue to spray Phragmites and other invasive species to keep that river system as clean as possible. We have the stormwater BMP program. We only have only have one application for that. And that's for to construct, for example, rain gardens and things like that. Then we move into our recreation areas, recreation overhead. That's mostly for the agreements with Summit Lake, with Game and Parks, and then also some cost there on equipment for that facility. Then we have the Chalkville Hills recreation area, and we break that down with equipment. And this is where we've inserted the shed that was discussed for the equipment. Instead of leaving it outside, we can actually have it covered and hopefully prolong the life of that equipment that we have sitting outside. So that's where that would be taken care of, and where that's budgeted for. 22 of 45, that's recreation area development. That's our cost share programs, and again, they're listed there in order, or not in order, but in order where you can see exactly what amount is going to which entity. Elkhorn Crossing Recreation Area, just minor things there. Rockford Road, those just some additional type of amenities, maybe a frisbee golf, things like that. Platte River Landing, again, some additional work there. We're finishing up phase five in that particular location, and that should take care of the improvements there for a while. Then we have Prairie View and then the Mopac Trail, and those are mostly just yearly maintenance types of things that continue to carry over. Waterloo, Elkhorn Rec Site, again, just yearly maintenance. Tree removal, concrete, all those types of things you continue to have to do at your rec areas. Grasby Crossing, the only thing difference here is expanding the parking. These areas are getting a huge amount of visitors in the summer. You've heard from the Waterloo Fire Department, the number of people on the river in any given day, and especially on the weekends. So we're finding some squeeze space with users there. Park residents, they're doing some additional upgrades there. Trails Assistance Program, and again, these were approved again by the board during Eric's presentations. And then the Papio Trail System, and this is where, for example, West Papio, Giles to Millard, Highway 75 Bridge Trail, and the other Western Douglas County Trail. Those are all the Adams Park, all the trails are listed there that the district plans on working on. This fiscal year. Page 26 of 45 is forestry and wildlife. That's very small, $2,500. Missouri River Projects. And this is our cost share with Bellevue for the riverfront development of the $1.4 million that we cost share up to. And we said we'd do 50% of that, so that's our contribution there. Also land rights for some purchases of property in that particular area. Wildlife Habitat Program, Celebrate Trees, those are all considered just consistent from previous years. Heron Haven, again, we can contribute to the maintenance of that facility on Maple Street. Rumsey Station, again, more just maintenance types of issues. Wetland Stream Bank Mitigation Banking, that's one area where we continually lack in developing wetlands and wetland banking, and it always takes the first hit every budget because it's very expensive and it's hard to find the money to do them, and it's something that we have no wetland credits, it's something that we would like to develop, but we just can never find the resources to do it. Glacier Creek Mitigation, again, same thing, we'd like to do more there. And the Pigeon Creek Mitigation, that's just monitoring there in Pigeon Jones. Page 29 of 45, that is the Watershed Fund, and that's where the funding for the reservoirs the revenue and the expenses are accounted for. And so you see we have the Water Sustainability Fund for 6 and 7, $6.4 million, we probably spent some $6.7 million. And then the fees collected per the interlocal agreement from the developers. And then the watershed miscellaneous, and that's the Sarpy County reimbursement, and that's then we get the farm lease on some property we have there. And then we actually have the cost for preliminary design and land rights maps for WP1, but WP2, WP4, 7, 12, and 19, and that was the ad hoc committee we went through to select firms to get 60% plan designs and have land rights maps at the completion of about a 10-month period. So they're working diligently on that. If you look on page 30 of 45, that's the W5 detention structure. That is Prairie Queen, and that's wrapping up. And there's nothing budgeted, so that has wrapped up.
Actually, just FYI, the transfer deed was recorded today. The City of Papillion has the deed as of today.
So City of Papillion owns that officially today, so we have no operation or maintenance on the park area. Dam Site 15A project, that is nearing completion, continues to be worked on. Lori could probably have a more detailed update if anybody wants to know where exactly we stand on that. And then page 31 of 45 is the WP6. That's the regional detention structure. We are currently, we've purchased land and we are currently working on, and WP7. 6 and 7, we're both working on those at the same time. Don't know if they'll be constructed at the same time, probably 6 first, but we continue to have land rights and engineering fees and design fees. On page 32 of 45, Zirinsky Water Quality Basin number 2, we've already purchased some property. We have some professional services in there, obviously additional land rights and construction costs. So we've got 6, 7, and Zirinsky Basin 3 all going on at the same time. WP1 regional detention structure, this is where we get into 1, 2, 4, 7, 12, and 19. These are reflect the amounts that we were allocating and spending on the contracts to get those to the 60% plans and land right map. So that'll be coming up quicker than we think. We gave the consultants 10 months, and so they're deep into it. And so once those become available, then we will work there. We'll have those presentations. Also, we have another account on page 36 of 45. It's the Lower Platte River Vegetation Management, and that is the cost share with the Papio, Lower Platte South, Lower Platte North. Again, I talked about that earlier. That's the program to eliminate the invasive species like Phragmites in the Lower Platte River. And so we're a very proactive approach. We're ahead of a lot of different districts and areas of the river, and so we continue to try to stay on top of that. Then we move into page 37 of 45, and this is the rural water systems, Washington County Rural Water, and Zach's available if anybody has any questions on that. And then page 38 of 45 is the Thurston County, and then page 39 is the Dakota County Rural Water. And again, we've had some great success by eliminating some debt, refinancing some debt, getting new customers like the Lakeland area, Rosalie. And so it's definitely helped the bottom line of all three of these systems. So a few years ago, these were very touch and go, especially the northern rural water districts. And it was close to having to take some drastic measures, and they were pulled from the fire. And I think they're doing a good job now, and that will be reflected, I believe, in the audit this year as well. And then we go into our IMPs. If you look on 40 or 45, that's the Elkhorn River Improvement Project area, and then the Elkhorn River Stabilization Project. And on 42 is the Elkhorn Pigeon Creek Drainage Project. That's an IPA as well. And then the Western Sarpy Drainage Project is on 43. And then the Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership is on page 44. And that is the income and expenditures from partnership fund dues, and then the contributions and cost shares from that organization. And the district is the administrative authority of that particular partnership. And so you act on those reimbursements or those cost shares appropriately. And then also we have the Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership, and its budget is right there on that particular page. And actually it's you'll see some very high, well, at least income on that particular line, and that was due to the Facebook data center. They had to pay a significant amount of development fees for that particular area. So if we could have only done that in the Papillion Creek Partnership when it was developing instead of waiting until it was fully developed, it would have been a whole different story on that. All right, so that goes through at least the pages and the particular projects and programs. Again, they're if you look at them, they're not much different than they were in previous years. But happy to go through any particular line items or any particular program. We have, I think, the entire staff here that has any project or program in the budget, and they can explain maybe what's going on or why the additional resources that were needed, or why it stays the same. But again, it's an exhaustive. It's 45 pages. It's very detailed. So again, we can answer any question. Again, this is the first draft. We will go through, by the time it's adopted, we'll probably go through four of them. We will again discuss in August. There is a public input meeting in August, and then it's finally adopted at the September meeting, and there's a public hearing, and the tax levy is set in September at those meetings. And so once we get, as this gets refined and we get other information that impacts it, those changes will be made from each draft. The budget is due to the state on September 30th of each year. And so once it's adopted, then we get it mailed off, and Carrie puts it in a nice little 5-page form, and then we're usually good. So, but any questions on the rationale, how we get to where we get? We could use 7 to 9 million more, but with property tax, and we understand that as a staff, you understand the sensitivities of that. And you try to balance what the needs are of the organization with what you can reasonably expect from that. So that's how we attempt to do it. We attempted to keep it operating and keep things continually progressing, but knowing that we don't have all the money in the world. So go ahead, John.
Question for you, John. And I don't have the exact number in front of me, but you mentioned the nominal 7 or 8 million. Cash on hand at the end of the fiscal year. What didn't we do that resulted in this much cash on hand?
Well, it's a variety of things. We never spend 100% of our budget because I think the biggest thing right now is permitting. For example, we've been waiting a permit on the Missouri River levy for 5 years. So are you going to get that next month, or is it going to be another 5 years? No one knows, not even the people that are reviewing it. So a lot of those, the things that we do, or it's weather related. We may have some maintenance projects that we have lined up, and all of a sudden you've got a stretch of bad weather, either in the summer, spring, or winter, and it pushes everything back, and so you don't get it completed. So the $8 million carryover is typically what we've seen, the last 11 years. We typically have that kind of same carryover year after year. So it's just, I would say it's impossible to spend 100% of your, but everything would have to fall into place perfectly to spend the entire budget for us, just because of the nature of our projects. Larry?
Well, I have a question on page 15, the road structure program. And what exactly was that? It wasn't very popular.
I don't know if the cost share, and Marlon, you can probably talk about it. I don't know if the cost share is high enough now, or if these departments are going a different direction. Marlon, you want to highlight it?
One of the things, the cost share maybe could be raised, but one of the factors that's come into that is this is replacing old bridges and putting in basically a road dam, and so making it an earth structure rather than a bridge. But the counties get such good cost share from Federal Highway, it's actually cheaper for them to put in a bridge, even though probably a road structure would be better. It's an economic. And I don't know what we do for sure there, as long as the economics stay that way.
All right. And then I had a question of the Alliance, Lower Flat North?
South? Lower Flat North. Okay. Voted no.
And what is their northernmost boundary? No. Do they stay clean where the Platte River and the Elkhorn River meet?
They would be on the other side, I guess. We would be on the, I guess, east side, and they would be on the west, southwest side, yeah.
They go up to North Bend? Or
the northernmost would be North Bend. Or further.
The northernmost boundary of what?
Of North Platte North.
Oh, they go up, and they go also up Shell Creek.
Okay.
Kind of branches up there, but it's basically to Columbus. And downstream on the Platte, and then a couple of tributaries come in.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Thompson?
On page 3, I noticed the election fees.
Mm-hmm.
Actual was $114,000.
Yeah, that was...
What the heck's going on?
Gee,
that
was
the 1 cent tax yeah. that we put on the ballot, and we have to reimburse the county that places any of those issues on the ballot. So, and that was an unknown expense, so that's why it was at that cost.
Right. Which we try to anticipate every cost, but you know, but no one knew what that was going to be, even if we knew we were going to put it on. Any other, but, and again, this is something that you're going to have to, I mean, dive into, digest. You can't really do it in an hour session, go through each line item by line item. But, you know, if you've got questions, comments, or whatever, let me know, and then we'll get back.
Could you just touch briefly on the watershed fund? It's significantly different this year than last year. So where would the additional money come from, and what will it be used for? Page 29, for one thing.
I'll have, Amanda, you want to kind of go through that and why and kind of touch what we did there.
Cash on hand. For sure the state grants and funds, the income is much more than last year because we really didn't have very much. We were awarded the Water Sustainability Fund grant, but we didn't have very much time to expend those funds last year, so our reimbursement was very small. And we hadn't started construction.
You collected it, though, and it's sitting in the...
No, we have to reimburse. We send in invoices and payments, and they reimburse that format. Right. So that's income-wise.
Is that a year-to-year thing, or we have to apply for a grant every year for that?
No. So we've received the funds for those two projects, WP 6 and 7. So as long as we're working on professional services, land rights, construction for those projects, those costs are all eligible for reimbursement. And I don't know that we have a time frame. I'm trying to think what the agreement said. You know, we sent our construction time frame to them, so we have that length of time to reimburse.
Typically, there's no time frame. You request reimbursement as a project.
It can go over successfully.
Yeah. And it will.
It will, yeah. And they know that. I mean, that money's set aside. It's in basically an escrow account until we access it.
And then if you so beyond that, as far as... so that would be the revenue. Expenses are probably, Dam Site 15 was going, you know, pretty heavy this fiscal year. And now in the upcoming fiscal year, we'll see pretty heavy action on WP 6, 7, and Zirinsky 2. So that's where the expenditures will come from. We've really been just doing a lot of design work on those three projects that will start construction. So... they haven't been as high in the last fiscal year.
But as far as $13,206,000, that's fairly safe. We're certain of that.
Yeah, so, okay, if you take out the $6.5 million, you know, then you're in the ballpark. So the other revenue that's in that is, you know, the cash on hand for that account, and that comes from, and then there's the watershed fund fees.
Right.
And that's what the communities collect.
Has that been consistently collected, or is it behind?
No, it's consistently collected, but it's not a consistent amount of money because it's assessed when a development comes in through their subdivision agreement. But it isn't collected by the communities until people come in for a building permit. And so there's this real lag between when it gets, you know, noted and when it gets paid. We ask for collection. I think it's just once a year. Omaha pays us twice a year, but it can vary from, you know, when we first started, it was a couple hundred thousand. Now we're getting up into the couple million, and we expect it to rise because of the number of
per
class.
Year, you're expecting
per year.
Anticipating. All right, thank you.
Hopefully we'll get a couple of big data centers in the Papillion Creek watershed.
Yeah.
Because that generates a huge, huge amount of than just the individual residential.
They also seem to, like, once they plat a big commercial lot, then they come in for building permits much quicker than when you plat a big, huge housing development, and then you're waiting for each house to come in with their $700, you know,
right.
$800.
Right. And if you look at the note, you know, the 2014 Watershed Management Plan, you know, we were anticipating, you know, taking $8 million a year out of general fund and putting it into the watershed fund, and quite, you know, now we're down to about $4 million. Transferring, and so that is where you know, I think we're falling behind a little bit. So We will also, staff-wise, and specifically Amanda, we work through some funding and timeline scenarios with the reservoirs that we that the priority reservoirs we have. We've also ran some different options if we are successful in getting some outside funding sources. So once we kind of finalize those and look more, we're going to bring those to the board to kind of show you how we can cut a significant amount of time off getting these six priority reservoirs done if we can just get a certain additional, you know, it doesn't have to be NRD money, if we can get infrastructure money or something like that. So again, it's one of those things we are constantly looking for how can we assist with getting these built. And I know we got some, at least an invitation to apply for the RFPP program for one of our reservoirs, and that would pay, I think, you know, up to...
It pays 100% of construction and engineering, I believe, but then we would have to pay all the land rights, but that's still a really great deal. And right. We've applied for that. Where's for... That it's from the NRCS, and we've applied a number of years, and then this is the first year we were, you do a pre-proposal, then you get asked to do a full proposal, so we were asked for a full proposal, which is a great sign, and that's an income source that we really hadn't counted on at all, so that would be great.
Has any other NRD ever
happened before? Wahoo, Lower Platte North, right? Wahoo for some... Yeah. Similar flood control on the Wahoo Creek.
It's actually a new program on Farm 2014 Farm. Okay. So it's been recent.
Thank you. Anything else? Go ahead, Larry. Look like you had a question.
Sure. I guess at what point, if I wanted to try to get a trail through Cunningham Lake for 2018 or something. Possible.
Well, the city of Omaha would probably be the lead on that. So if they would have to basically approach us, say, hey, we'd like to, would you be willing to cost share? And then we would bring it back to the board with a number and an interlocal agreement and say, are you guys willing to spend whatever that is on
this
trail? I've
been working the phones. So.
Okay. So yeah, that would be the process. I mean, they would have to take the lead because it's their facility to manage and not ours. So that would be the process. And I talked to Brooke about it before. I just don't know how far along they're planning there. So. Anybody? Anybody? Rich?
Have you guys ever more for process?
Well, as you see, I don't have anything to give you. No, if somebody has modifications, I would ask if you have something that you would like to increase funding for or decrease funding for, let me know. And then it's going to be a trade-off. So if you want to add something, we're probably going to have to take away from something. Unless we get a valuation that's 4.5 and you've got extra money, which you just, I mean, this is what you have to deal with. Right now, this is the total that we have to play with. Now, wherever categories they'll go into, and wherever you shift that those resources, that's what the board, that's your decision. Or if there's a project or program or something, you just say, you know what, we just don't have the money to do. We want to either divert it or to save it or whatever. That's decisions that you guys have to make. So, I guess this is what we put before you every year, is saying. This it keeps us in compliance with all legal requirements, contractual requirements, cost shares, interlocals, all those types of things. And isn't that $5 fine? We got an extra $5 from Director Weiss. So this is the baseline that keeps us moving forward, keeps us doing all the things that we have agreed to do as a board, as an organization. So that's where we start from.
Turned it off.
We could add tenant.
The noisy room. Me turning off my phone. Okay.
Again, it's not drastically different than probably the past three or four budgets. Except we're slowly seeing a decrease in overall spending because the larger, like DAMSEC 15A, is getting done. So so you'll probably see a continuing drop. That's it?
That's it.
For now.
15 minutes.
All right. 15-minute break.
The hour is approximately 6:30. I'm calling the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee to order, please. A copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted at the rear of the room. And with that, quorum call, please.
Director Fred Conley.
Here.
Director Teaser.
Here.
Director Thompson.
Here.
Chairman John Conley.
Here. Item 4 is the adoption of the agenda.
Move.
Second.
Roll call.
Director Teaser?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Chairman Johnson?
Yes. I have here an affidavit of publication of the notice of tonight's meetings, and that will become part of our permanent records. Now moving to item 6 is a review and recommendation on the Big Path B. Papio Levy Culverts Phase 2 Rehab Project, Martin Cleveland, Lindy Rogers, and Mike Sotak, please.
Sounds good. Can you join me up here, Lindy? Mike? Okay. For starters, about 2 years ago, the district hired FIRA to do some work for the district. We had 12 culverts that needed to be rehabbed. And so rehab or replace. And so we hired them to do that. And that process, it takes a long time. It takes a year to basically design, permit, and then get the project bid. And then it takes about a year to build the project. So basically a two-year project is what it's taken so far. Tonight I thought it would be helpful to have FIRA give you an update on what the project turned out to be. It's roughly a $2 million project. If you look at the construction costs and engineering costs, construction costs is about $1.8 million. So if you add those two together, roughly $2 million project, so it's a big project for the district. We're going to see more of this as time goes on because our projects are wearing out. It's kind of like potholes in roads. You've got to fix them, and so we're fixing our potholes, and this is our case. It's a culvert. And so we were fortunate in phase one that we had City of Omaha and City of Bellevue participation. There was actually five structures that were owned by those two cities, and so they agreed to pay 100% of the engineering and construction of those structures, which is very helpful for the district because that saved us roughly $500,000. And so we continue to go and investigate our facilities. And this last couple of years, our staff went through and actually televised 150 culverts in the Big Papio. We did a lot in the Little Papio and West Branch and other projects as well, but basically, we've completed the Big Papio first because it's kind of our oldest project and probably the highest risk as far as having structures that are, I call, worn out because they're perforated or maybe having other issues. And so we've identified 16 structures that need to be rehabbed in this next phase. So, but first, let's go ahead and have, if you wouldn't mind, have Lindy Rogers with FIRA go through and kind of do a little bit of a slideshow of what's been accomplished to date on phase one.
You have this one right here? Sorry. Yes, I'll take the next one. So just a little project summary about our phase one project. Like Martin said, it's 13 culverts that were replaced at 12 different locations. So one of the locations had a double structure. Two of the culverts were federally constructed in the beginning. So the ones that have the Corps of Engineers symbol up at the front. So those fall under a different set of guidelines when the Corps reviews them as well. All of the culverts fell under the PL 8499 rehabilitation program, though. So in order to stay eligible in the program, the district has to repair the culverts that they deem deficient. So as Martin said, the project began in April of 2015. We were in about design, preliminary design and final design for about 7 months, and that also included permitting. The project bidding was about 4 months, so we had some snafus with getting what we thought would be acceptable bids from contractors in the area. But we ended up with a good contractor in the end of it. So that one kind of took longer than we're used to seeing in those. And then the construction started the 5th of July last year and is finishing up. We're doing our final walkthrough next Tuesday. So going through this process, this was kind of the first set of culverts that have been rehabbed for the district. Everybody kind of came in not knowing what to expect from all of it. But there were some lessons that we learned. So we learned a lot about construction review with the Corps. It's a big process when you go through these, especially the ones that are federally reviewed. They give you guidelines that they want to see. And there's also, they're a lot more stringent on materials you can use as well. So for instance, all of these pipes, all 13 of these pipes had a riprap placed underneath them. For the federal ones, we also had to place geotextile fabric underneath the riprap at the outlet to show that there was, to show stability. But we've actually had other Corps engineers tell us since then that they don't agree with that. So we're kind of watching that one to see what we have to do with future phases on that one. We also did some unsteady state modeling on the Freaky Farm culverts. They're two very large culverts. Their existing was an 84-inch CMP and a 48-inch CMP. Another engineering firm had done a preliminary review for your district and came in and said that the larger one was going to have to be replaced with two 96-inch RCPs, and the smaller one would have to be one 84-inch RCP. We came through and did an unsteady state analysis to show that the water doesn't all get to the culvert at one time, and we were able to take those back to replacing the larger one with one 96-inch RCP and the smaller one with a 48-inch RCP. So it saved the district a lot of money, not only in the construction of the materials, but the time for construction as well. We were able to streamline the permitting process. We got the 404 through within a month, which is pretty amazing. We learned how to situate our reports, so they were just looking at it. All the check items were right there, and it was just kind of a great little process to show them each of the different sites, but not have them look at the sites as one big project. We also were able to streamline the 408 permitting process, believe it or not, and it went pretty easily just with easy reviews with the Corps and their staff and the Levee Safety District. We also prepared construction licenses for the district when they needed to go ahead and get easements for their construction site. So we worked with their lawyers to determine what kind of documents we needed to prepare. And we were able to use documents that weren't prepared by a legal surveyor, but just gave them a good description of what the easements were going to be. Another big part of this is lessons we learned during constructability. We learned a ton about slip lining, what was going to make it easy, what was going to be more difficult, what kind of pipe sizes could we actually get into some of these culverts that are a little misshapen or some that have rivets. So that was a good lessons learned for us. And then just kind of the constructability overall with just soils and stuff in the area. So on this project, there are three full cut and cover replacements. So there's three pipes that were completely removed. The levee was excavated, and there's ring levees built around them. So that was three of them. There was one that was partially cut and cover replaced. So it's the top part of it stayed in place. The bottom part of it was replaced completely. And then there were several other that were a combination. So we went in and figured out what's the best method. Can we replace a small portion of it and slip line a small portion of it? So there's several of those as well. So these are just some of the pictures of the construction process. If you look, the one down here to your lower right, that shows them doing joint testing. So we became familiar with that process. And that actually has a whole specific set of guidelines on what the Corps requires you for joint testing as well. And we followed those on some of them that weren't federal ones as well. We became familiar with some soils in the area and what to do if you have these bigger pipes getting laid on softer soils. You know, how much rock do we need to bring in? How far down does that rock have to go to give you a stable base to put those pipes in? This one we put sheet pile in to kind of hold back some of the water. This is right at the Freaky Farms. This is that big 96-inch one that I was talking about. And then this kind of shows you them placing some of the piles and some of those different methods that were used. Again, just some more pictures. This is the one that's just south of F Street that actually connects to the City of Omaha culvert. And we were able to keep their upper part of the culvert and just replace the downward end. So this one had two vertical bends on it. And then we also came in and prepared a document for the Corps because they require that all of their pipes be replaced with RCP. And we came and they recommended that this one was also replaced with RCP. Well, we went in and did a strength analysis and a little TM to give to them to show them that we thought that the solid wall HDPE would actually perform better in this scenario. It's a small pipe than a jointed RCP that could cause you some disconnection in the future. So we're able to place that. And this one shows you one of them that was the bottom part of it, or the top part of it actually was removed. And then what they actually did is came in through this hole and slip lined the bottom end of that one and then replaced the top part with an RCP. Then the slip lining was obviously the other half of it. So lessons learned in that, like I mentioned before, just kind of some of the pipe sizes, how do we get those in, what can we actually force into some of these smaller pipes. We learned that during constructability that putting in a bull nose and pushing is easier, you know, than just trying to shove the straight end in there. We also learned that some pipes are better when you push or pull. So we kind of have that all down and what end you go in on the pipe to get the slip lining to work the best. Again, these are just a couple more pictures. We did have a unique pipe on this one that I kind of joke that I think we got served the worst of the pipes on the first end, which is good. So this pipe actually had vertical bends, horizontal bends, and fell underneath the city of Omaha's main sanitary sewer outfall. So it was a kind of a tricky one. We on the vertical bend, we did propose, like, we put in a pipe bladder and grouted around it. There were some issues with that and a grout leaking, so we learned that. Different methods that we can do in the future to make sure that doesn't happen. And then we also found some ways that we could go in. They actually have this little crawler that goes in there, so it's kind of like your video crawler, but it just chipped away at all the grout that was in there, so then we were able to go in with another fixed method that they're actually putting in there tomorrow. So at the end of this, what we're giving back to the NRD, one of our goals is to make things easier for you guys in the future. So we created as-built drawings that show you all the changes that have occurred from the original design. And then we're going to give these shape files back to your group so that when they go out, they have, I'm sure all you guys know this, but they have their smartphones, they can access all this. But it's actually going to hyperlink to all these as-built files. So when they're out there, they'll be able to pull up our shape files and see exactly the method that went in, what's the inverse and the invert elevations, the outlet elevations. And then if they click on the hyperlink, it'll actually pop up that as-built file for them so they can view that on their phone. So there's not a lot of chasing paper anymore. And so then just a little bit about the phase two scope. The NRD approached us to kind of look at some of their other priority ones that they have going on right now. We started looking out. We did the video investigation for, I think it was 25 of them, and then we kind of narrowed it down so that there's 16 that are included in this phase two scope. And that 16's on 15 sites, again, there's one double going on. We came up with a schedule on what we think based on, you know, what we did. We know we can streamline the 404 process. We know getting up in front of the core quickly after our preliminary design is important to make sure the 408 process goes quickly as well. We worked with Mark to talk about, you know, when did construction want to start? So if construction's budgeted into next year, we'll want to make sure that we have everything finally designed so we have a good construction estimate for him in May going into budgeting next year. So in our final cost, what we ended up doing is we went through all these videos. We prepared a detailed cost estimate based on the construction costs we saw in the last phase, what we thought it would cost the NRD to fix each of these. And typically, a lot of the engineering firms will use 20 to 25% of construction costs is what they feel their fees would be. So when we came up with that detailed cost estimate, Mike and I took a look at it and did 20% of it, and it was like $446,000. And we went back and we're like, we learned a lot on this first phase. We've got this streamlined. We've worked with the core. We know what they're going to be looking at. So we ended up taking $86,000 off that. So we're able to save you guys about $20,000 for what we actually think we can do the project for. So we came up at the end with the scope and fees. And that's, I think that's in their handout, correct?
This is the handout, yep.
So this has the detailed scope and fees, and we're able to get pretty detailed with it. Usually you don't see this in a preliminary phase. But because of our past experience, we felt like we could really nail in and hone in on what it was actually going to cost us or the hours that were going to be spent towards this. And like I said, typically you'll see a contract come in at about 20% of construction costs, and this one is $86,000 lower than what our estimated construction cost was on this. So open it up to questions.
At this point, I'll ask for a motion on the subject.
Motion to approve.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Is there anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Mr. Winkler?
I got a question, on these culverts. I'm sure there are various reasons why you're replacing them or having to replace them, whether they have separations or if they drop or whatever, but what is the main reason that you replace these culverts?
I'd say the majority of them are probably that the invert of the pipe is actually perforated, so there's holes in the invert or the flow line of the pipe. Some cases the pipes have open joints, where the joints got open. So, if you look at the structure, a lot of times the actual pipe is okay as far as being round, relatively round. But the problem is that the life expectancy is basically gone because that bottom is now allowing water to go underneath the pipe and flow underneath the pipe and then basically undermine the pipe over time. So you've got an unstable condition. You go in and you can actually replace the pipe, dig it out. But the problem we have in most cases, there are bike trails over top of these trails. We have levees over top of them. And so there's always a safety issue about cutting open the levee. You've got to build a ring levee around it. So lining the pipe, whether it's plastic or whether it's a centrifugal concrete or something like that, it gives you a way to do it with it. It's a safe way to do it. But
and add strength back into the pipe as well.
But I think in most cases it's perforation, isn't it, Lindy? I don't know if you...
It is perforation. There are some that were severely separated as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
why would you use a perforated pipe if you're trying to get rid of water?
What we're doing really is that the perforated pipe is more of a host pipe for the new pipe. So you slide the new pipe through it and you actually grout between the two. So it's just a composite pipe of plastic, grout, and metal. So metal really is sacrificial. It's kind of like paint on a car. The car is still there, but the paint is kind of not necessary because you have a plastic pipe inside this metal pipe. So it's rather than digging it up and taking the metal pipe out, which you could do, this is less costly and it's also less invasive on the levee.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to avoid opening up the levee because there's always a jeopardy of a levee overtopping when that rain event occurs and the levee is open, or you can't really open it up, you got to build a ring levee around it, but it's a lot of extra work. So that hopefully answers your question.
And the perforations are caused because of corrosion in the pipe. They're metal pipes, so when you get the water going through them.
It's the salt in the water from...
Why wouldn't you just change the material of the pipe?
Well, we are with where we're lining, we're actually using plastic. It's actually high-density polyethylene. So it's not going to rust, but it's a plastic pipe inside the metal pipe. Metal pipe is, again, just a host pipe for the new pipe, really.
For example, you take a ductile pipe, iron pipe, belt stick it in. You can get various sizes, whatever. They also have the same, similar, they have a concrete liner that's in them, but then they have a finish liner inside. When they're designed to run water, they don't rust, they don't ever deteriorate. So I guess my question is, why wouldn't we look at doing something like that would be a little more permanent?
Well, again, these were built probably 40 years ago, and at the time, state-of-the-art was kind of galvanized pipe. Today, we don't really do that. We use either at least aluminized or polymer coated. But in most cases, we're going to concrete pipe, really, because mm-hmm. concrete's 100-year life expectancy. So back then, it was more economics because they're cheaper. And the other issue was they didn't really realize or think about the fact that in 30 years, 40 years, it needs to be rusted out. And that's what's happened is we're seeing these pipes rusted out. In most cases, in the ag levees, are almost all galvanized metal. We have some that are newer that are aluminized
mm-hmm.
or polymer coated, which are better. But the galvanized have about a 40-year life expectancy.
So what you're using now to replace all these has a longer lifespan that is going to be something somewhat permanent?
We view the plastic as maybe 100-year life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
Concrete's 100, and I think plastic is a little more unknown because it hasn't been around as long, but we realize that salt can attack plastic. There are some chemicals that attack plastic, but very few things can degrade plastic like metal can. And so in the case of the metal pipe, it's actually still okay, except that invert is rusted. The rust pipe, most cases, is all there, and it's all pretty good shape, but the invert is just rusted out because that salt from the city streets, it affects our cars too, the same salt affects the pipes.
This stuff that you're putting in, is it cleanable?
It is. It's actually much more cleanable than our corrugated metal. It's actually smooth plastic. So you can, our guys that actually TV the pipes love it because it's easy to clean. It's easy to TV because there's nothing to hold still.
They won't damage it if they try to clean it.
No, it's really pretty inert. I mean, it's anything plastic today, as you know, and plastic in the oceans, it never goes away, unfortunately. But it's good in the pipe. It never doesn't really go away long term.
Okay. I have other director questions. If not, I've got one. How do you address when you're inserting the high density polyethylene? How are you addressing the fact that the old pipe is maybe undermined, and it may not have structural stability?
Do you want me to take that?
Yeah.
So the grout that we actually call out for a non-cementitious grout, so it actually has similar characteristics as the existing soil. So when you put that grout in there, it goes through the perforations.
Oh, okay.
So and it fills in that ground and then mixes with the clay. So it's one of the reasons we called out that grout.
Okay.
Just specifically to fill those voids.
And you know basically what it should take too. So if you have a lot more quantity grout in it that's actually used than what you predicted, then you know you have a cavity in the pipe. So that's kind of a double check. Is that
we have grout plans for all of them when we go out and start construction to do the grouting on them. So.
Anyone else have any other questions?
Just briefly, I had a question.
Go ahead.
Phase one is showed. You know, City of Bellevue, City of Omaha also helped fund the actual culverts. Is that right? Are we funding in totality the actual engineering of this in phase two?
These are all ours, I believe.
What we're actually proposing to do, Director Japp, is that we've looked at this, and there's six of these structures that are actually owned by the city, and so we've actually started dialogue with the city staff, and so our expectation would be to bring an interlocal agreement to you and to also to the city, and they both would approve them funding 100% of the engineering and construction costs. If they're not willing to do that, then the fallback position is we do less of the pipe, we do just the section through the levee. Under a core criteria, we have to fix that section at the levee. The section beyond the levee doesn't really affect us, but it affects the city. And the city in the past has been cooperative. They realize this is their liability as well, not just ours, even though it's under district's levee. And so phase one, they did fund 100%, and we expect them to do that again. That would be our expectation. So of this project cost, as a side note, the construction cost is about $2.3 million roughly. $1.1 million of that is the city's cost, we think, based upon our estimates we've been looking at. Again, that's just preliminary numbers, but probably $1 million of that cost would be hopefully funded by the city for construction, and then there'd be another $200,000 be funded for design. So they'd be paying at least half of the project cost if this goes through. So
that makes sense. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments real quick?
Lynn, you mentioned the savings on the pipe in the Fricky.
Yeah.
Rough range of what that saved instead of upgrading to what it was told to us earlier.
It would have been double the cost of the one single one because there's two of them, but it's I think it's close to $400,000-$500,000 construction costs alone. Okay. So
not counting the material, not counting obviously the pipe.
Yeah. No, counting the pipe.
Counting the pipe.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Counting the pipe.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call and motion, please.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Fred Conlon?
Aye.
Director Teasley?
Yes. Yeah.
Chairman John Conlon?
Yes. Thank you. Now we'll move on to item.
Thanks, Linda.
Agenda item 7 is a review and recommendation on amendment to WP6 and WP7 professional services contract with Fire Engineering. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. Mike Sotak is here with Fire Engineering to help answer any questions or discussion on this topic, but also several years ago we started work on WP6 and 7 flood control reservoirs with Fire Engineering. And one of the tasks in that phase two design contract was to submit a Water Sustainability Fund grant application. And these are take an enormous effort, and I never actually printed the whole thing because we had it electronically, but it would be humongous if we did. But we had the task in that phase two contract, and it was $59,000, give or take a little fee for that task. And we submitted it. We were initially denied, if you remember, the Water Sustainability Fund, and then we were able to submit a second time. And we had Mike do the second application, and it was kind of initially thought that maybe there wouldn't be that much work to this second application because we already had so much of it there. but there actually was really another huge significant effort on this second Water Sustainability Fund application. A lot of the economics were redone. Several of the questions that we didn't think applied, we addressed a little differently, and Mike can answer some of those in more detail if you want. But it was another significant effort, and it just kept building on itself. And so we, on that task, went over budget by $38,291, and it was, I know there's a lot of, like, why did we go forward without having the money in that task? And at the time, it was thought, well, you know, it was just, it built on itself, like, well, we have to redo the economics. Based on feedback we got from the state and some of the commission, we just kept building, and we were putting in more and more effort, and we thought perhaps that the not to exceed fee of that phase two contract could absorb those costs. But now that we're at the very end of the phase two contract, we can see that it is not going to absorb it. So for your consideration tonight is an amendment for that additional work that went into the Water Sustainability Fund application, which was successful, and we just talked about that's that $6.7 million we talked about in the budget meeting that we will receive for those projects. If there's any questions or if you want more details on that second application and what went into that scope, Mike can answer those.
First, let's get a motion on the floor, please.
Motion to approve that recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Anyone that public wish to speak? Director? Mr. Weiss.
What was the reason for the over budget in the first place?
So we had a fee to do a Water Sustainability Fund application, and we submitted one, and I think, was that one the one in December?
Yep, that was the initial one.
It was in December, the first time that, you know, they accepted applications for this fund, and we were denied. We scored just several points below the cutoff, and we didn't get the grant. Then they opened up the applications again another 6 months later, so we redid the application, and that's where this extra task.
But why did it go over?
just spent more time on it. And more.
Well, it was an entirely separate application. So the first application, we learned, it was the first time they took applications, and so we learned a lot, and Jim can probably tell you a few nightmares about going through, you know, some of what happened there. But the biggest change between the first application and the second application was that we removed one of the sites. We initially decided a good strategy to include WP5 because of all the recreation benefits at WP5 in with 6 and 7. To make it look better economically and make it more competitive in the grant application process. After we did that, then after they reviewed it, they made the rule that you can't do that. And so basically we had to submit a separate full application we had to redo all the economics and all those that went along with the flood insurance, all the maps, all the text you had to do to take out WP5. It ended up being a little bit of a more of an effort than we
wanted. Was anybody aware of this when you guys got removed or whatever you said, you guys got stopped on the project for a little while? Was anybody aware of what it was going to take to kick this back up?
Not stopped on the project. We just didn't get awarded the grant the first time around. Okay. And just so, Mike, Prairie Queen, WP5, WP6, and 7 all to kind of lay out in a series on tributaries that run through the west to the West Papillion Creek. So we thought the benefit of showing how all three of those work on flood control was a good strategy, and that's what Mike's saying. They said, no, you already built that one, so now redo all your economic benefit numbers with just the two sites, and it just took a lot of work.
It was a brand new process, brand new commission. The rules were probably not even dried on the paper when the first application went through. So everybody was kind of feeling their way through this. And then after the first round, everyone knew better what they were looking for, what the scoring committee was looking for, and Jim sits on the commission, so he knows. But so then we had to everyone that applied had to totally revamp their approach, and to make sure you got enough points that you could be funded. And so it was all brand new, and so no one knew how it was going to shake out.
Okay, I just thought maybe there was a reason that, you know, I mean, if it was just a joint thing where,
right, like we stopped,
nobody
suspected again
what was going on, so I get it. I just thought maybe there was somebody might have made a mistake or.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Rick Thompson, you want to defend yourself?
Having read the application, seriously, the first go-around was the first grant awards across the state. Mm-hmm. And there are certain questions in the requirement by statute had to be addressed. Put my other hat on, we, the NRD, and the FIRA learned a lot by that. Basically had to almost start from scratch and revise according to the interpretation of the rules of the Water Sustainability Fund itself and how they'd be spent. So it was back literally to the drawing board and said, okay, take this one on, you're not going to get reimbursed for it. Reapply with these other questions significantly addressed, because you're competing with dozens of other entities across the state. And some of these people put the people in the scoring committee, put their blinders on and go down. And I got to admit, they did a great job of revising it. So point value assigned by a subjective scoring committee member, you wouldn't have to interpret it too clear, too deeply, I should say. So the application was fresh. As the scoring committee looked at the old ones, they kind of went to the historical file. The new ones, same stuff, but there was a post as a brand new application. And that's going to happen again come January. Things we're on the agenda here, other application that we might have. Yes, but statewide, there's going to be, mm-hmm. Okay, no, come on down, submit your application. So there's going to be even more hustling and bustling for those wonderful dollars, all $8
million. Okay, thank you, Jim. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Director Craig Conley?
Aye.
Director Keezer?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman Duncan?
Yes, thank you. Now we're moving ahead to... We have one more item, don't we?
Yeah, I mean.
This is a review and recommendation on the Water Sustainability Fund grant application for the NWAR Airborne Electromagnetic Surveys. Paul Woodward, please.
Okay. Great lead-in from the last topic. Mm-hmm. With what we're looking at here is water sustainability funding to continue to do more of the AEM surveys. If we go down to the map, Mike, which is the second thing. So scroll down a little bit further. Basically, these red lines that you see here, just these few transects, and then the gray lines down here is kind of the AEM surveys that have been completed in our district. So these in 14 and 15, these were the ones that we didn't have grant funding for at the time. NRA had a grant or did have money from Department of Natural Resources to help us out do that. But that was the big one where we flew a lot of the entire eastern part of the state, kind of following conservation and survey division test holes that were already there. So we could basically try to perfect this method of acquiring geological data. And it worked very well. And so from there, we've proceeded. If you remember, again, the first Water Sustainability Fund grant cycle, most of the six NRDs that make up NRA had something they wanted to do in their individual district. So we all at that time applied for water sustainability funds that were under $250,000. And most of us, I think all of them, were successful at the time. So we all got these flights done. Ours was this concentrated area in Sarpy County. Great data that we got back, great information. And so this time, well, then in the off year, I'm talking about the next Water Sustainability Fund grant, there was quite a few applications for more AEM surveys. We didn't actually go in after an AEM survey. We wanted to take some of the data we had and put it in that 3D model, if you remember that part. And we still might apply for that one, but that was when the other NRDs then went after AEM surveys. Most of them didn't get the water sustainability funding that second go around. And our project didn't get approved last time either, so we were kind of just below the cutoff point. Anyway, some of the feedback from that was, well, if you guys are all working together, why don't you show that? That should help the grant application. So this time I think everybody, all six of the NRDs have gone back through, talked through the long-range plan that NRA has to keep completing the geologic investigations here in the eastern end of the state, and have decided that we'll all have our different little areas, but we're all going to go in together as one big grant. So that's what this proposal is for us to be a partner with the other five NRDs. And what we're proposing to have surveyed is really kind of a what I call reconnaissance. It's pretty, it's a 3-mile by 3-mile grid. And what we're trying to cover is there's a paleo valley or old kind of deeper channel, maybe 150 to 200 feet deep beneath the silt and clay, glacial till of an old sand and gravel kind of old riverbed down there. And we don't know exactly where it's at here in southern Washington County, but this would help us give us a depiction of where it kind of begins and ends, if you will. And then the other part of the survey here is to tie into some of these survey lines that didn't quite connect, so tie everything together. And we kind of come close here in Douglas County, kind of figuring out where that paleo valley ends, but also running the lines together here, because what we found out when we surveyed right next to Gretna down here is that we're not going to get a whole lot of other chances to start flying next to the city for very long. As long as the city keeps growing, that takes away our ability to ever fly that area in the future. Power lines, roads, all that stuff will become too much interference, and we won't be able to get any good data. So part of the thought was with that was to bring it down here. So if you look at doing all of these green lines, since they're pretty well spread out, it's only a total cost of like of $230,000. Our past project, if for reference down here, was a lot more miles of flying, and it was about a little over $400,000 to do that part. So it really is kind of a look at a recon, but what we're proposing to do then is to go in as part of a bigger grant application with all these NRDs combined together. The total grant, I think I have it down there, is about $3.2 million is what they'd be requesting from the $8 million available. So it's a hefty chunk of change, but I think it would get a lot accomplished. So, and that's kind of why we're proposing to go in on one grant application. Okay. I think that covers it. Is there any questions on that?
Well, let's get a motion on the floor first. Chair to entertain a motion.
I can move to that recommendation.
Is there a second, please? I'll second it. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors. Director Bradley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. On the Paleo Valley, how far down is
it? It starts at about 150 to 200 feet, and it's usually about 50 foot thick. I don't think we don't have age dating actually on any of those sands and gravel, so we're not actually sure how old it is. Thoughts are that it was deposited when the glaciers left or left something like that in there.
Director Thompson.
The other, excuse me. The other five NRDs, is this subject to getting the board permit?
Well, yeah, I believe they're all going through at least notifying their boards or getting their full approval. So I know it'll be on Lower Platte South's formal board meeting next week to give approval to submit the grant on behalf of NRA. Lower Platte South being the acting NRD for the NRA for the whole NRA group.
How was Director Teaser?
How's Lower Platte North on this?
They've actually already approved putting in, and they had a significant cost of, the total project was $750,000, so I think they would have some $300,000 to $400,000 worth of their own funding. But they have approved it.
Any other questions or comments, please? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Director Teaser?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes.
Director Teaser?
Yeah.
Report the vote, please.
4-0-9.
Thank you. That concludes our agenda. We are adjourned. Thank you. You want to move right ahead, Fred?
Director Conley, you have a 5-minute recess, so we'll take.
Start the social hour.
We'll call the meeting of the FDL subcommittee to order. As the previous stated, the Open Meeting Act is posted outside and on the back door. And with that, quorum call.
Bradley?
Here.
John Conley?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Weiss?
Here.
Chairman?
Here. Adoption agenda.
So moved.
Is you got a second there?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
John Conley?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Weiss?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. Proof of publication, I have it before me. And with that, I will also state that I will enforce a 3-minute speaking limit from the general public. And with that, we move on to agenda item 6, review of FY18 budget. Don Winkler.
Did you
adopt the agenda vote?
Yeah.
We adopted. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we adopted it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That was quick. We didn't caught us off guard.
Is your conditioning not working here again?
I don't know. It's a little warm.
I think so, too.
Trying to get Teaser out of here.
Hey. Hey, give me a break.
Somebody new to run.
Okay, so we had the budget session previously, and it looks like most everybody was here for that. So I won't go into the detail that we did there. Proposed total operating budget is $69.2 million. Proposed property tax levy is 0.038034, the same as last year. Again, 12 out of 13 years of the same or decreased mill levy. Total property tax requirement, $23,627,168. Again, that would be for an average, or for a $100,000 house, it would be $38.03 a year or $3.16 a month. As you go up, if it's $200,000 property, it's about $6.33 a month. Again, we're basing the estimation off of a valuation increase of 3.5%. Final valuations, again, will not be available from the assessor's office until mid-August. Last year was 3.88. Again, some draft budget assumptions, $700,000 for cash, necessary cash reserve. And the cash on hand is $7.6 million. I think I maybe stated that wrong in the budget workshop. As noted above, this is the first draft. There will be changes. There's no question about it. And so we will make those changes as, again, plans firm up, as numbers become clearer, as estimates become more, accurate. So. Again, we're in the budget figures are in the ballpark figure for compliance with the 2.5% LID requirements. Again, review the budget, and then again, as questions or you need clarification on anything, do not hesitate to let me know, and we will get you responses as quickly as possible. Dates to remember: the budget August 8th, 2017, is the FEL subcommittee to review draft 2. Public input meeting is at the August 10th board meeting, and then the budget hearings, adoption of the 2018 budget, and we set the tax levy for 2018 at the September 14th, 2017 board meeting. One item of note that I failed to mention during the budget workshop, due to LB 432, the delinquent tax allowance that is budgeted for $100,000, that's no longer allowed, so we will correct that in the second draft. Of the budget. So that's one item I had on my notes and I forgot to mention. So due to legislative changes, then we will have to make corrections on that particular item. Again, open for any questions or comments. Again, first draft, so this is the general outline, general blueprint of the district and of what we propose to spend
for this fiscal year.
No action needed by the committee, however.
No, it's just a review.
Any comments from the public? Anyone wishing to make comment? Hearing none? Directors? Director Bradley?
Yes, Ed, just again, questions. On page 5, item 4393, legislative representation, and I understand there's an extra $20,000 for federal representation, water strategies, and that, looking at from what it was 2017 to what's proposed for 2018, that's jumping up a little bit in legal legislative representation. What might be the mindset for that?
The water strategies, their initial, they're going into the next year of their contract, so that kicked up a little bit. We split that contract with Lower Platte North and Lower Platte South in the Papio, so three districts help pay for that firm to represent us. So it's not all ours.
Okay.
So it's just their increase in fee.
And then I had the same page, the pollinator habitat, and there's full budgeted $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
I sure wish there could be more zeros there, but is there any way we can maybe double that just to $5,000 or something? I mean, the pollinator habitat, I can see that increase, just a personal wish.
Terry Schumacher, is that our Pheasants Forever?
Yeah, that's our safety corner for wildlife program.
Right.
And they have a program set up where we can only do a limited number of acres a year in their fiscal strength. So the most we can spend on that program in any year, which would be 28.
28.
Any further questions?
We have been working with City of Omaha on some pollinator. I know the park on Pacific is geared toward pollination or pollinators, and we work with the Omaha Bee Club and some of the local bee organizations on educational pieces, speakers, things like that, habitat. So, in fact, we changed our seed mix to include more food stock for. We've been doing a lot of different programs, projects.
What's part of Compass City?
It's right by the fire station, 156.
Thank you.
Any further comments, questions? Hearing none, moving on to agenda item 7, review and recommendation of the 2018 budget with computation, 1% resolution. John?
This is just the okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. A state statute requires no governmental unit shall adopt a budget containing a total budget of restricted funds more than the last year's prior total budgeted restricted funds plus allowable increases. Basically, it's a restricted funds to 2.5% per year. But the board can also choose to increase that limit by additional 1%. Approval requires a supermajority of the board, which would be 9 of 11 votes for affirmative vote. The additional 1% covers inflation in the general cost categories mentioned below. We do have the 2.5% lid applies to general expenditures, and we listed them. And then we have the following items are lid exceptions. So the best way to describe it is the lid exception is not necessarily tax increase. It does give the district more flexibility to meet the lid requirements as we calculate those numbers to the general expenditures it applies to. Obviously, the lid exceptions we don't have to worry about. So it's particularly important when you have lower valuation increases than maybe when you're getting your 8 to 9 or 7% ones we've seen way in the past. We've been dealing now with 2, 3, 3.5. It does take a supermajority. We did list the year's history of the vote, and you can see if it was a baseball team, it would have a very poor average. But we do bring it up every year to see if the board would agree to do so. So we obviously would recommend the flexibility, but again, it takes 9 of 11, so it's had a difficult.
Right. Any comments?
No, Mr. Staff recommendation.
Thank you. For the second?
Second.
Comments from the general public? Directors? Director Thompson.
I'd just like to reiterate what John said, and for the new directors, this is within the certain categories. It does not, over the years, I don't think when we said yes that we've ever had to exceed, but it's another tool we have available should those items go beyond what currently it is. So I think it's an important tool to have, but it's not going to increase taxes. We still have to vote that as a general board within our mill levy. But it's, again, a good tool to have, just in case we need
it. Any further comments?
There's an increase anyway every year of 2.5%.
Right? That's correct. Yep.
Well, okay.
Further comments? England or I'm sorry, Director Bradley.
Well, if we can get more money to pollinators.
I don't know if that would be kind of
blocked.
I'm assuming there's no further comments. Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Weiss?
No.
Bradley?
Yes.
John Conley?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
4 yea, 1 nay.
I believe that concludes our agenda. We stand adjourned.
Okay. Thank you all for attending Budget Workshop. If you didn't get your dinner or late lunch, you're in the library.